everybody. This is John Tatey welcoming you back to Pop Mom, the podcast where culture is relative. Yes, it's time again for my mom, Bonnie Tatey, to share her view of pop culture, small town life, and those riddles of human nature on this episode. Wow! If ever there were an episode to tune in for, we discuss the British TV miniseries Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. We've never had so many requests. It's time for Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. Let's get started. Let's bring Mom in now. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
I'm feeling good. The weather's nice here. I'm happy. Happy spring in Chicago. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Now, last week you had a little stomach thing going. So we
Oh, that's right. We had no podcast last week. Yeah, I ate a I think I ate a bad poke bowl. Oof. Yeah, I was hard up for 4 days, but I always lose a lot of weight when I have these episodes.
I don't think that's advisable. That's not the best way to do it.
It was nothing like what happened to me last summer, but like when my stomach starts to go a little bit like that, I like sweat now because I don't remember if I talked about it on the podcast or not, but last summer I had this episode with salmonella poisoning, just awful, awful for a few days. I didn't know my stomach could punish me or my guts could punish me to that degree. So this was just like, you know, I had nausea for a few days or whatever, but the lingering fear of that wrenching experience makes
horrible.
It like a psychological challenge, right?
Oh, it definitely is. Years and years and years ago, I got sick like that on July the 4th.
Oh.
And every year, there's just a little tiny memory of it left. So I understand what you're saying there.
Are you getting out and about?
I did get out and about when my sister was here. I have a little, this is something, it didn't strike me till after it was done, but we went up to Molly's Balloon, which you know is situated on Main Street in Hanover. And they have some seating at windows that look out onto Main Street, which is interesting to look at as you're eating. Fun to see the students coming and going, what they're wearing and such. But there was a table where a man looked like he was finishing up. And I said to the hostess, do you think you could ask that man if we could just sit with him until he's done and we'll just, I was kidding, of course. And she said, well, he's almost done. But there's other tables that are also finishing up. We allow 10 minutes after we drop the bill off and I said, well, that's really okay. I was just kidding. We'll sit anywhere. And so we waited for her to clear up another table. But while I watched this prime spot, this gentleman unfolded his newspaper. He had about a half a mug of tea left. It was in a clear glass. And he was finishing his tea and reading the newspaper. And it struck me that it was like watching history right in front of me. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I can't tell you the last time I've seen that, and I don't know when I'll ever see it again.
I know. It sounds made up as you tell the story.
It wasn't. It wasn't made up.
I believe you, but yeah.
I just felt like, take this in. He's relaxing with the last bit of his lunch and reading the newspaper. I just was very impacted by that.
Maybe he was sending a passive-aggressive message to you, having overheard your request to the waitress. Back off, lady.
So anyway, I wanted to share that with you because I thought sometimes we miss these lasts. And
lasts. Yeah, you think that's the last time you'll ever see someone reading a newspaper? It might be.
Relaxed. Drinking, sipping a nice hot beverage. I don't know. It might be.
Molly's Balloon, you called it. Of course, it's now just called Molly's. And I think it's a fairly generic college town pub rather than the, you know, we were at Molly's the last time we visited New Hampshire, right? Speaking of getting sick, Christ, I had a run here. But aside from that, we were at Molly's, and I was standing there complaining, as I do every time we go to Molly's, that it is no longer called Molly's Balloon, and they don't have balloons out. You know, you used to get a balloon when you were a kid. So that was an exciting part of going to Hanover as a kid. Then they changed it to Molly's, and I complained about it. And somebody said, yeah, maybe they changed it because people thought it was a balloon store. And I was like, oh, I'm sure that's why they changed it. There's so many of them around. Well, still, Molly's Balloon, and it's a college town. So every 4 years, you've got a whole new clientele coming through, right?
And the town is so massive. Of course, they would not discover that it is a bar and a delightful place to eat. They would never find that out.
Hey, you may joke, but when you said Molly's Balloon earlier, I thought, do I have to jump in and let the listeners know that this is a restaurant and not a balloon store? It sounds like a balloon store. What can I say? Molly's Balloon, but it's a restaurant. And it's a good one, right?
It is a good one. Yeah, the food is very good.
If you're ever visiting Hanover, New Hampshire,
we recommend that, yes.
Molly's, formerly Balloon.
Now, I want to tell you another story. This is a very short little story.
Please.
I'm very close to chucking all social media.
Oh, really? Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really reluctant to do it because, again, I stay in touch with high school friends and whatever. But this week, an ad popped up for a clothing company. And I'll tell you the name of it. It's Fresh Produce. And they used to have the most excellent clothing, soft, all cotton dresses and shirts and shorts and t-shirts, very nice stuff. And so an ad popped up from them. Sometimes I'm not in the best mood. And I made a comment and I said, I remember when these clothes were really good. And AI popped up and said, thank you so much for your feedback. We appreciate our customers. And it just made me laugh because it's so... You're thanking me for telling you you have a crappy product.
We appreciate our customers, even though this machine is set up because they don't, right?
Right.
They appreciate not hearing from their customers and being able to ignore them.
So that's the new thing that's happening now, is that if you say you like... Old Spice, something pops up that says, oh, we thank you so much for your feedback, but it really isn't people. And in the end, none of us will be speaking to people anymore. So disillusioning.
When we have someone come out to service our furnace or air conditioning, the company will send a little bio of the technician and a photo, like they'll text it to me when he's on his way. Have I talked about this before? I forget.
No, but and we the got language.
Oh, really? And the language in it is so. It takes like the text has to be divided up into chunks, right? Because it's so long. So it comes as this series of like maximum length text messages. And it's just talking about the technique, where he wants to travel. He hopes to travel to France someday because he appreciates the fine culinary culture. And it's just like, you know, that thesaurus-y style of artificial intelligence prose, you can tell it's all fake. And that they like when they made these guys go to a website and type in your favorite movie, where would you like to travel someday? And so I find it very alienating, and they're doing it so that I feel a closer like bond with the contractor. Right. And it achieves the very opposite.
It does. It's scary to me.
Yeah, of course it is.
I don't like that at all. I think that is so weird. And I just want to know who is sitting in their dark little room thinking of these things that sound like great ideas that companies are jumping on the band, but in reality are just freaking people like me out.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing about this furnace... thing to me, Mom, is if they sent me a text message that says your technician today will be Harry Harry's favorite movie is Ghostbusters, and he wants to go to Ireland someday. Like, I would find that charming, right? But the fact that they have to create this fake prose, and as if there's some, you know, literary wonder on the other end of the line, waxing poetic about my furnace guy's favorite food, they made it worse. It could be cute and charming and actually human if they just did it the way a human would do it.
Right.
I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. As in, here's a picture of Harry that's going to show up at your house between 12 and 5 o'clock.
That's good. That I like that service, right? That's a service to the customer. Yeah.
That's right. This is what he looks like. You know, he has never committed murder. And And that's all I need to know. And maybe here's a picture of his cat. And then that's enough information.
Hey, I know we're going to talk about chocolate lotion, but have a problem I want to share with you first.
Okay.
Is it a problem? It's just an interesting development, which is that more and more of my acquaintances listen to the podcast.
Oh.
I got to hear about it in my daily life, right? So here's something nice that happened. I mentioned, I forget in what context, honestly, but I mentioned my friend Austin. I'll say her name because this isn't a nice thing, on the podcast. And she works for the American Licorice Company. I'm going to give her, they are the makers of Red Vines. So she, I'll turn on my camera just for this, Mom, so you can see what I'm talking about. If I can figure out how this works. Okay, can you see me now?
I can.
So she sent me a bucket of Red Vines as a thank you.
Did she mean to send that custom, to me?
With a custom label.
Oh, no, love it.
These are John Tatey personalized Red Vines. That's me.
Oh, my God, I love it.
On the label. So thank you so much, Austin. Now, here's the nice thing that happened from the podcast.
Yeah. Does Austin know that I'm part of this?
No wheedling and weaseling here. No angling.
I think we both should have gotten one of those. Well, I know Austin. I met her on Trivia Night.
That's right. Well, we had a Trivia Night the other night, and I thanked Austin for this wonderful, one-of-a-kind.
Really?
Nobody else will ever get this type of thing ever.
Well, wait. If she sends me one when I eat all the Red Vines, oh, no, I can't send it back. Well, I'll send her a bucket of Chex Mix if she sends me one of those.
Okay, stop wheeling and dealing. All right,
I'm sorry.
We'll take this offline. So okay. That same night, we had another friend of mine. I'll call him Jerome to protect his identity. And during a break, I told a story about how I had gone to see the movie Dune and Dune 2. And it had to tell some kid to put his cell phone away. And I talked about how it felt like a very dad moment. And Jerome said, you told that story on the podcast, but on the podcast, it was some other guy who told the people to shut up. And I said, that was actually the first time we went to see Dune. And this other thing happened the second time. And he said, and then after the moment passed, I was like, did he just accuse me of being a showbiz phony? Which I think he did.
He's fact-checking you.
And I was like, which accusation is worse, that I was lying on the podcast or that I was lying to my friends here in the room? But one way or the other, I'm not a very good guy. But I went to see Dune twice and there were assholes at both screenings, but
I'm telling you, come up here. There was nobody in the theater and everybody behaved.
We still had a good time. They weren't that bad, but
that's good.
Yeah. So, by the way, Jerome, if you hear this story now on the podcast, I don't want to hear anything about it.
There you go.
Stop crossing the streams. Although this is the same, This is the same guy who got me turned on again to Spice Cake, who I talked about the other week.
He's very
good with sweets, I have to say, about.
Interesting.
I can see why he'd be a fan of the show, because we appreciate people who appreciate sweets, right?
You know, at Easter, I got a case of the new Coke Spice.
Oh, yuck. Yeah.
Well,
I'm sorry. Spice Cake is one thing, but Spice Coke, now that is taking it too far.
It isn't. I don't know what it is. I really think it's that they cleaned all the vats out and just added it to Coke. it's not really. Sometimes it tastes like it has a little raspberry in it, but there's no spice. But they missed an opportunity to have a tie-in with Dune. So, oh, well.
Oh, spice. Yeah. It's funny you say that, because my buddy sent me a Dune meme when we were talking about Spice Cake. So, yeah, the tie-in is there. People are ready to make the connection.
Well,
what vats did they clean out, are you saying? The vats of spice?
No, vats of sodas that they make.
Oh, so you think this is just Coke flavored with the residues of other sodas? Yes. That's what it tastes like.
Yes, that's exactly what it tastes like.
Okay. Oh, I'm glad we got that little mini review in there.
Yeah.
Speaking of mini reviews, what about chocolate lotion?
Well, yes, I want to tell you about this. I got some, it's actually cream. It's a little container cream.
Oh, I don't want to talk about chocolate. Nope, forget it. Lotion.
It's not.
Moving on.
It smells like chocolate. And then when you put it on, after about 10 minutes, it smells like cat pee.
Oh, no, really?
Why? Our chemist that talked to us about bananas and Banana Foster has to tell us what is going on with this.
Oh, the person who emailed in, you mean?
Yes.
Got a couple emails, I think, to share later in the show. But yeah, I'd like to know why that. I mean, chocolate, it's disgusting from the get-go, I have to say, Mom, because no matter what, that chocolate smell is going to mix with your skin's sweat and all that.
Oh,
and
my God. What do you think I'm doing here? Lifting weights?
Well, existing as a human being. And there's certain smells that I think are okay for lotions and creams. And this is not one of them. No.
All right.
Oof.
All right. This last story that I have is about looking for. I wanted to make some triangle headscarves that tie. Back in the day, they were very, you know, popular, and there was a sewing pattern by the Simplicity Company for these headscarves.
Now I'm picturing Annette Funicello. Is this the type of headscarf?
Yes, like that. But they're kind of cute to wear in the summer, and they keep your hair out of your face, etc. So I thought I would make a couple, and I wanted to find the exact pattern. And I said, well, where am I going to go? eBay, right?
Yeah. You want the classic.
I want the classic. And I got, so I searched and I found the number. And it's a Simplicity 6358. Head scarves, got the picture of it, went on eBay, and then I realized, when I couldn't find it at all, that I'm looking for a pattern that is 60 years old.
Yeah. So probably if you did find it, it would be like a museum piece, right?
Well, they're out there. Somebody has them in their cache, but not on eBay. It was just a real reality check, you know?
Just because it's 60 years you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. We have these moments every once in a while on the podcast where you and I mutually recognize our advancing age. 60 years is a pretty good one, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I can't beat that.
I only found one that was available, but it had already been sold. So, yeah.
Have these been digitized in any way such that you could print them up yourself?
There are tutorials that I could use, and I think that's what I'm going to have to do. But I just wanted to have the pattern just because. So I'm getting old, and that's that's sad.
Hey,
it's not sad. It's an achievement. I really am very proud to still be here.
That's right. It beats the alternative is what I always say.
I fully embrace that.
Speaking of old people, I'm pretty sure they love Mr. Bates versus the post office. But the world is waiting for your verdict, Mom. So shall we get into it?
We shall.
The British television network ITV kicked off the new year with a four-part miniseries called Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, a dramatization of the Horizon Post Office scandal. The series began airing on January 1st. By January 4th, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak declared the scandal one of the greatest miscarriages of justice in British history. It would be hard to disagree. As chronicled in this TV version of events, the country's post office corporation tormented hundreds of local postmasters with accusations and prosecutions of fraud for cash shortfalls that were, in fact, the product of flaws in the post office's so-called Horizon computer system. Here's a clip.
Yeah, look at this. Look. Right, I've been through these 100 times. I don't know, I haven't seen it before. Look.
I'm going to have to talk to the school.
23rd of March, right? I'm logged in on Terminal 1. I put in the transaction, and it shows up on Terminal 2. That should never happen. That's proof. It's proof there's something wrong with the system.
Lee, the children. The bullying is getting worse.
I know. The only way to stop it is to prove that I'm not a thief, right? It must be a bug. It must be a computer bug or something. Right.
What are you doing? Lee, no, there's 15,000 post offices on that list. Are you just going to randomly call them all up and ask them if the computer is broken?
How else am I going to find someone with the same problem before my case goes to court? I've got to show them it's not just me. Lisa, the post office are suing us for £26,000, which we didn't steal, and we haven't got hanging around in piggy banks.
Mr. Bates versus the Post Office is currently airing in the United States on PBS's masterpiece, Mom. Does Mr. Bates and the Post Office deliver?
Oh, does it? Oh, does it? This was beyond my wildest dreams at the heinous act that it was.
And oh my God, it is
still
evil.
In court, you know.
Yeah. It's and in Parliament. It's just working its way through every legal channel.
Which I don't understand. These poor people, when they become clerks, or I don't know what they are, but they're little nooks in neighborhoods that not only deliver the mail, but many of them were meeting places for people, or somebody baked bread and sold it out, you know, out next to the mail. And they were just a lovely, lovely idea. And all went swimmingly until they added a computer that malfunctioned.
How many episodes did you watch, Mom? I've seen the two that have aired in the US.
Yes, I've only seen the two. I thought the first one made me so angry. Just
Oh my God.
Boiling angry. And the second one gave you time to breathe. It didn't have quite as much oomph to it, but it did show you that the people responsible were not going to take responsibility for it.
That's right. And the people who were at the receiving end, their lives were destroyed.
Destroyed
by these accusations and demands, you know, because they would, the computer would mess it up, and then they would demand that the postmasters make up for the shortfall.
Which they had signed a piece of paper saying that they would.
They're obligated to provide the money that for the services and products they sold. Yeah. But the computer. The computer. Now, this computer system, this hasn't been covered in the series yet, but this computer system essentially originated. They wanted to implement like a swipe card system for their employees, and they spent like £700 million on this system, and it didn't work right. So to sort of salvage it, they transformed it into this electronic point of sale system and spent even more money on it. And there's this, I want to separate at this point the scandal from Mr. Bates, the post office, the dramatization of it, because the, not separate, but talk about the relationship between them, because the scandal is very complicated. It involves these gigantic bureaucracies and gigantic corporations, and the legalities of it are so twisted by design. You know, the every right. obstruction that the post office could put in the way of this was put up, sometimes and often in shady areas of legality.
Well, and look, can I ask you right here?
Yeah.
Why would they not say, oh my God, look at this, we're going to sort this out?
Well, that is a question at the heart of this series, which so far, you know, certainly makes the post office people out to be villains, but cannot make them into mustache twirling villains. There is a great banality to their evil, to use that old saw. And near the end of the second episode, the question is directly posed, like, what kind of people would do this?
I mean, the part in the second episode that I found so chilling was when the fella said he had seen the operation. He had been there and seen the operation, and the company, what is it?
Fujitsu?
Yes.
Yeah.
Said, oh, there's no record that you were here.
Right.
And he dug through his archives and found a message from them saying, we're confirming your visit of blah, blah, blah. That alone said to me, they're not going to do anything right now. They are out to just cover their butts.
All the essential points in the TV show, and this is what I admire about it, are basically true. You know, do they merge characters sometimes? You know, this thing happened to this person and this thing happened to another person a little bit, but boy, not that much even.
Right.
It's
right.
It's very true to the reality of it as I understand it. And this has been a story among like computer nerds for some time. And in fact, the TV series covered how like Computer Weekly like was the outlet that first started to break open this story. And there has been general astonishment among people who frequent sites like Hacker News that this wasn't a bigger story, and then it became one by way of this TV show, which, hey, this ain't great art. And a lot of times on the podcast, I like to talk about the aesthetics or the directorial choices. Yeah. Like, this is cliche, straightforward. The dialogue is, I wrote down one. One guy says, I'm your husband, and I have to read about this in the newspaper. It's just like very functional dialogue. That said, I really admire the script for, yes, using a lot of these cliches, but condensing and conveying a very complicated scandal, not just relying on the simple thread that everybody can understand of the computer messed up and they blamed the postmaster, but really bringing in a lot of the complexities to it in a very compact and digestible way. It ain't great art, but as a chronicle of this scandal, I am very impressed with it. I mean, I like it a lot. I think it's good is what I'm trying to say, but it's not, I'm not saying like, oh, the framing will excite you, or I love the director's eye. Like, this is not that.
It's just a great story to look at.
It's a good story, and I think well told in terms of conveying to people the horrors of what happened here.
I mean, one thing, as you say, that is not pie in your face, as I like to say, is that the individual postmasters took great pride and joy in their part in a neighborhood in supplying the not only the mail but whatever else they brought to the table for their customers. They took great pride in that, and you can see that that is part of the angst of it all. Not just what the heck's going on with the money, but that they were so beloved and that now the neighborhood might think they're guilty of something. As they were all told, you're the only one. You're the only one experiencing that.
Yes. I mean, that is, if there's a crystal at the heart of this series, that is the evil of it, which is, we've all heard it, right? We've all called into one helpline or another, and it's, my cable isn't working, or whatever it is, right? And the person on the other end says, oh, we haven't heard anything of that. How can I know that's true? And in this case, it certainly wasn't true, but that's what they told everybody. We haven't gotten any reports to make them feel isolated and lonely and stupid. Moment at the end of the first episode where Mr. Bates stands up to this essentially support group and campaign group that has been formed among these postmasters, he says, we'll never be the only one again.
Yeah.
After this. And I was really moved by it because that's true to this story. It's people, little people, right? Like you and me coming together up against these titanic forces and drawing strength from their togetherness. I think that's true to life. And yeah. I'd love to see it on the screen.
I'm really anxious. I wish we could see all four episodes. And I guess if you have PBS Passport or whatever, you can, but we don't have that. That's one of 4 million that we,
yeah, well, I think you just got to give like $20 to your local station or something like that. I forget what it is, but it's you're donating to your local station to get the passport. I will say it's a pain in the butt. It's not Netflix. I had to log in twice and click. I felt like 100 different links to get to my passport viewing area so I could see Mr. Bates versus the post office. So speaking of malfunctioning computer systems. There was some irony in how much difficulty there was in just watching this damn show for me. But yes.
Well, you can watch it just on regular PBS too.
Yeah, that's why I said it's on PBS's masterpiece. I'm sure they are re-airing it all the time because of the interest in this show. I think the interest is justified. I do love Toby Jones. As Mr. Bates himself.
He is also in a fabulous, fabulous show called The Detectorists, which I think I recommended.
Oh, I haven't seen that one. I remember you recommending it,
yeah.
But I haven't seen it.
He and a friend go out metal detecting in this field and find this and that. And it's very interesting and fun. Makes you want to get a metal detector. But he was in that too.
He's good as an everyman,
right,
who's
exactly
determined, but not, you know, there's a scene where there's a meeting with the member of parliament and the forensic accountant who's going through all this stuff, and Mr. Bates is like lawyer who's helping him out. She's the one who pounds the table and says and demands justice, right? And he doesn't. And I thought that was a good writing choice. You know, he's not the table pounder.
Right.
He's the uniter, and he's sort of the calm, dogged, and determined, slow but steady tip of this spear.
Right. He is the turtle in the tortoise and the hare race he's just keeps right on going. The other thing that I thought it brought out is different people's emotional stability.
Yeah.
And that some people can handle a situation like this. But in the end, the post office didn't care. It just steamrolled over everyone.
They do a nice job portraying the mental effects on people. That one young woman ends up in ECT, shock therapy. I know it's not called that anymore, but electroconvulsive therapy, I guess it's called, even worse.
Oh, that's pretty.
Yeah, that might not be right even, but that's what I remember. In any case, I never need to see that again. I'm sorry. I never need to see a scene of someone with that plastic mouthpiece in their bed pretending to be shocked by electricity. But most of it is not as sort of cliched and extreme as that. And I think that Mr. Bates's detachment, and he seems distracted often when he's talking to his wife. The way they sort of slowly lose their contact with their daily lives and lose their grounding, I think is well portrayed. Again, not with great subtlety or layers of nuance, but convincingly.
I agree. It is a well-told, gritty story.
Gritty. That's an interesting. You think it's gritty?
I think it is. I think it's so sordid that a group, you know, that in that respect, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I do. It's gritty in the dark aspects of human nature.
Of human nature. Explores. Yes, exactly. Exactly. You soulless people doing this to little innocent people that just want to help their community. Just want to be there and help their community. Very sad.
Well, we could talk about Mr. Bates versus the post office for hours. I got really into it. I sympathized with, you know, the last thing I'll say about this, Mom, is like, I've talked about my recent experiences at the post office. I dread going to the post office. I remember going to the post office being a real treat when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Toots. Who has gotten many mentions on the podcast. Toots was our postmaster. She knew everybody. She was always happy to see you. And it was a community center.
Yep.
Then I moved to the big city. I remember the Brooklyn post office. You'd go in and almost every square inch of the interior was covered in signs admonishing you to do this or not do that and stand here and don't do this while you're standing here. It's almost like a cartoon, that particular post office.
Yeah.
Very bizarre. And then the people at the post office near here are just jerks, and they just have nothing but contempt for the public. The vision of the post office as a community gathering place and as a human place run by people who will help you do what you need to do that day, it really hits me in the nostalgia spot. And this, you know, the idea that this could persist in modern life and then come under such attack from within is so disgusting to me. You know, like if the post office just trusted these people the way that their local constituencies did, these postmasters.
Right. Yes, yes.
How differently this could have gone, but they were not set up to trust their people. Culturally, structurally, they were just, wow, it's a sinister story.
It really is. It really is.
I can't help but be flabbergasted as I talk about it. So because you've all heard enough flabbergasting, Mom, what is your grade for Mr. Bates versus the post office?
Mr. Bates gets an A+.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
Yeah. Good job. Good job, Mr. Bates versus the post office. Wow. I'm so glad that came out.
It
came out well, you know. I was afraid I wasn't going to like it, especially when it started out and like it's kind of cheesy, you know, and
right.
It's pretty basic
in
its filmmaking. So I was worried, but no, it's good. And you can see it, God only knows how. It's on Amazon, it's on the iTunes if you don't have the PBS passport.
Do see
Mom,
it.
What's your recommendation this week?
I have a talk about quality. I can't find a word, but
quality of what? I can't wait.
I'm sorry. This is a film.
Okay.
Called Ripley. It is same story as The Talented Mr. Ripley, which was adapted from a book by Patricia Highsmith back in the 50s.
Mm.
And this is done in what they say neo-noir crime.
Yeah.
It's all done in black and white. It is gorgeous. It is gorgeous and full of feeling. The story will come across quite differently in this version of it. And I think it's a real treat. It is done so artistically. You know, you say black and white, but it gives it the feel and the creepiness of Ripley and all his nastiness and psychotic actions. It's fascinating. It's just fascinating.
I haven't seen it, but the selection of Andrew Scott to play Ripley is an inspired choice, I think, because he just has that. When I first saw him in Sherlock, I don't know if you remember him from that, where he played Moriarty, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, yes.
And he's very attractive and a little unsettling, right?
Yeah.
So it's a good combo for Ripley, and you enjoyed it.
I haven't seen the whole thing yet, but it's really, I would really recommend this. I think you should even give this a try.
Okay. Is it a movie, Mom, or is it a? Thought it was on Netflix.
It's a limited show. Series. Yeah.
It's a mini series. Okay.
It's a mini series. It has eight episodes. And
I don't say limited series. That's something of these these Hollywood types invented because they were embarrassed by. They don't want to be seen as mini, right? They're like, oh, it's just limited. God, this is just a big series, and we have to limit it to this because it's so great. It's a miniseries.
I'm trying to keep up with all the words, you know.
I'm not giving up on miniseries, but yes, the term de vogue is limited series.
Well, whatever the hell it is, it's very good.
Now I see why you hesitated at the beginning. You couldn't even remember what it was. Okay, so have you seen even a complete episode of this, or are you just slowly?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would really urge you to give it a try.
Okay.
You know, have a little glass of wine and watch this.
Oh, wow. Why did you make that recommendation? You would never do that.
Because I think it's a series that you want to just kind of relax and absorb.
Okay. Okay. What do you have to relax as you, because I know you're not a wine drinker.
No, I'm pretty much, by the time we go up to watch TV, I'm done consuming anything because after I brush my teeth, I don't want to have to brush them again.
You're just naturally relaxed.
Yes.
Like that Chuck Woolery song, Naturally Stoned, right? Remember that one?
No.
No? Look it up. That was his hit.
Oh, my God.
Naturally Stoned.
Okay. Oh.
Perfect, wow. Chuck Woolery, right? A square take.
Good God.
Yeah, look that up. I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere.
Yes, well, I would tell you that back in the day, I did try marijuana once or twice and had a very not good reaction to it. So.
Yeah, some people don't care for it. Well, I'm a little jealous of you.
Yeah, well, you know, if you have a bad reaction to something, you know,
it's easy to just keep away from it.
Yeah. It just doesn't really interest you. So.
Yeah. We got an email this week from Lisa and Todd P. They write that their favorite cakes are chocolate with real buttercream.
Mm-hmm.
Yum. And that's Lisa's. Todd says lemon cake with cream cheese frosting and blueberries. I think that might be the best one yet for me. Like, that's the cake I would most like to have. I love a lemon cake. Yeah.
That sounds good. Now, Merrick used to have a babysitter that liked lemon cake with chocolate frosting.
No, dear God. Why? Chocolate works in so many contexts, and yet I feel like on this podcast where you're finding all the places it doesn't belong. Your skin, lemon cake, no. Chocolate, stay in your lanes, which are many.
Well, what about chocolate and coffee?
Perfect. Great combo. Yeah. I mean, they had to invent a word for it. Mocha.
Mocha. Thus ends our culinary section of the show.
Lisa and Todd wrote a very nice email. They wanted to let you know about guinea pig rescue organizations in the New England area. I can't believe you don't already know about all of these. But
I know about the
along.
Guinea pig site. You're going to send that to me?
I will send that to you, yes. And the last thing I'll mention is they said they stumbled on our podcast while they were driving to Philly last year.
Oh.
How fitting, given our family's Philly roots.
Right.
That they were driving to Philly. And also, now that you've discovered the podcast, you know what your job is. Do you know what their job is, Mom?
Tell their family
their family and friends. Yes. Tell them all.
Everybody.
That'll do it for this edition of Pop Mom. This episode of the podcast was edited, as always, by Scott Jones. Thank you, Scott. Mom and I will be back soon to talk about more pop culture. The question is, now that we've talked about Mr. Bates in the post office, should this be the series finale? I mean, we can't top this, but Mom, what do you think?
Ooh, I don't know what to say to that, but can I just say, Austin, I'm looking at you.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about something interesting next time we get together.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you what, listeners, we'll come back if we can find something interesting to talk about. Can we do it? Stay tuned to your podcast feed to find out. Thank you very much for listening, in all honesty. If you enjoy the show, Mom's right. Tell your friends, tell your family. We'd love to get email, too. It's popmom@ological.net. Tell us your favorite kind of cake or talk to us about anything else. We love you, Mom, and I will talk to you again next week. Bye for now, Mom.
Bye, Johnny. I love you.
Love you, too.